Senator Weicker, what sentiment is there among members of the Watergate Committee to make the committee's subsequent inquiries less public than they have been in the first phase?
I think the degree of publicity is something that is far more in your hands than in the hands of the committee. I think the work of every congressional committee, whether it's ours or any other one, ought to be totally public and is so voted, and you've seen these changes take place. So as to whether or not they're televised or how many reporters cover, this is something that the news media has to go ahead and determine. I think all of our work ought to be done out in the open.
From CBS News, New York, Face the Nation on the CBS Radio Network. A spontaneous and unrehearsed news interview with Senator Lowell Weicker, Jr., Republican of Connecticut, who is a member of the Senate Select Committee on Presidential Campaign Activities. Senator Weicker will be questioned by CBS News reporter Leslie Stahl, Jack German, Washington Bureau Chief of the Gannett Newspapers, and by CBS News correspondent Nelson Benton. Our interview will continue in a moment.
Hello. I'm Ira Parsegian, football coach at the University of Notre Dame, speaking for the National Safety Council and the Bicycle Institute of America. You know, I'm deeply disturbed about the tremendous rise in fatalities of those kids who have been in bicycle accidents. Did you know that between 1962 and 1972, the number of fatalities more than doubled? I was appalled. And to think that many of these deaths could have been avoided if only these children had been taught. Yes, taught to drive a bike and obey the same rules that a car driver follows. You as a parent owe it to your children to see to it that they learn how to drive a bicycle to lessen the chances of their getting injured or killed. Your school would be the perfect place to have such a course. A bicycle is a vehicle, not a toy. Remember, when a child looks up to you, it's up to you to look out for him.
Now here is CBS News correspondent Nelson Benton.
Senator Weicker, there has been discussion in the committee about breaking up into subcommittees, one for dirty tricks, one for campaign financing. Isn't the ultimate effect, if the committee goes this route, to really diffuse the issues, to take focus off one and off the other?
No, I don't think there's any attempt to diffuse the issue of... or more specifically, the mandate that's been given to us to find out what went on in politics in this country in the election of 1972. I think there's an awareness that the committee has to be believed by the American people. And if we give the impression that we're more interested in being televised or of dragging out the hearings in a partisan or a personal way, then, quite frankly, the American people are going to say, look, the Constitution, the political system, this isn't what was important to this group of men, but rather sensationalism and publicity. And that just can't happen. So I want to do a complete and thorough job, but we have got to keep the American people behind us. And I think we can very rapidly and properly lose the American people if we give the impression that we're trying to drag this matter out or if in any way go ahead and package it for selling on television.
Senator, your Republican colleague, Senator Baker, has said that a central question, if not the central question, is what did the president know and when did he know it? You've been sitting there all summer. What's the answer?
Well, of course, I've disagreed with Howard Baker on this point all along. I've said all along that isn't the central question for the committee.
Even if it isn't the central question, though, what is the answer?
I don't know. I as far as the president himself is concerned, certainly we have the evidence of Mr. Dean, but beyond that, a little corroboration as to what role he played, either before Watergate or after Watergate. I say that disagreeing with the handling of the matter by the president. But to me, what's important and what has been fully illustrated by these hearings has been what happened to the Constitution of the United States and what happened to our political system. And I think in that regard, there's very little left to the imagination. That's why we get back to the other point that was mentioned by Nelson. How many more instances of using the government against its citizens do you want before you get the message that this is what was going on back in the White House in 1970, 71, 72? How many more dirty tricks do we want thrown out on the table before we realize that the whole concept of politics was based on a level akin to the gutter? I mean, how much more of that do you want? I think I've got a pretty clear picture. So in that sense, I think the hearings are conclusive. If, on the other hand, Jack, it is a question of, you know, the president's involvement, did he or didn't he, then I think the hearings are entirely inconclusive. I don't think there's any question about it.
We were talking about dirty tricks, which are, you must agree is a misnomer. Really, you're talking about
I agree with that.
Executive branch subverting mm-hmm. agencies mm-hmm. for their own use, especially mm-hmm. in politics. And the mandate of the committee, isn't it, is to write laws mm-hmm. on how we can change our campaigns and our elections. Can you really do that by shrinking down phase two, which is on so-called dirty tricks? Can you write them without giving that a full airing, as full an airing as you've given phase one?
Well, the biggest change of all, I think, has already come about, and that's something that you're not going to have to write any new laws on. I specifically refer to the shift of power from the executive branch of government to the legislative branch. Now, the American people, not Richard Nixon, but the American people for years now have looked toward the presidency, if you will, rather than the democracy to solve their problems. And clearly this has put more and more power into the hands of the president. I think that you've seen that trend reversed. I think it's the best thing that could have ever happened, and I think it's going to have a profound effect on the laws that are passed.
Do you think is it a fact that the power has shifted, or is it just kind of an interlude during these Watergate
trials? That's fair enough. I don't know. What's the Congress going to do? Are they going to take the initiative? You know, taking initiative means more than just going ahead and pointing your finger at the president and saying he's a nasty fellow. It means that they're going to have to do some homework down at the congressional level, which they haven't done over the years. And then we also get to the question, which is going to be asked of the American people. What do you want? You know, everybody says the president has to have the answer, the committee has to have the answer. The American people are the ones that are going to have to make the determination. Democracy is a very inefficient form of government to bring about peace and quiet and law and order. But if you believe in it, and I do, then believe me, you can't subscribe to the matters that were thrown out on the table here by administration officials.
Senator, may I ask you about what the American people want to know? There has been some discussion of an interim report by the committee. Last week, we had 37 days of testimony, and then Chairman Ervin said the committee will stand in recess at the call of the chairman. Mm-hmm. To those watching from a distance, that seemed rather anticlimactic. The committee has expressed no decision, has made none. Should there be an interim report so that some conclusions can be drawn by the committee and the American people can make some assessments of those conclusions?
No, I don't think an interim report by the committee right now is going to do any more than the hearings themselves have done. I get back to the point that I made. In other words, what have the hearings accomplished? When Watergate and ITT occurred, I got two or three letters over my desk. And that's really what appalled me. This was back in the summer of 1972. I fully expected to be castigated, at least by my Democratic constituents. But I got mail from nobody. So that goes to show how low we'd sunk as a nation in accepting these as the normal course of business in our government. Well, clearly, that's not the case today. It's going to be a long time before anybody tries these kinds of stunts again. The matters that have been brought forth by the committee itself, you know, we can sit here, Jack and yourself and Leslie and myself, sitting there in Washington, you doing your job in the news media, mine in the Congress, and say, well, we knew about all these things. The American people didn't know about these things. I think the committees have very dramatically illustrated what went on. The real difficult decision that now has to be made is the decision to be made by the American people. In the past, they could say, well, I'm sure these things went on in the past. But for the first time, they've had it presented to them and defended as a proper course of action for their government. That, in fact, it is proper to go ahead for the government, or rather the executive branch of government, to commit illegal acts in whatever name, in order to enhance the national security, the domestic security, whatever have you. I think this is pretty dangerous stuff. And just one last thing, Jack, and you've had it presented to you that political races should be decided on the basis of how much dirt you can get on your opponent, and it's been defended. Well, I'm sorry, I disagree with the illegal acts by your government, and I disagree with the political dirt. Others, go ahead and propound it. The decision is in the hands of the American people, Jack.
Don't you think that the committee has something more than an educational function, though? Don't you think you people who have been sitting there listening to this, the seven of you for all these weeks, have to make a judgment about who's telling the truth about what happened or how high the corruption went?
No, I don't. I think that's the job of the special prosecutor in a very specific way. In other words, as to who's guilty and who's not. I think...
Let me narrow the question then.
All right.
People have to decide who they want to believe here. What
right.
does a reasonable person believe about this? Don't you think you have a responsibility to give them some guidance by telling them what you believe and who you believe?
I think each person that has testified before that committee has told a portion of the truth. In other words, I've never looked upon it in either resolving the conflicts in testimony or who's lying. I can assure you that everybody has told some portion of the truth. And, Jack, do I think the picture is substantially very clear as to what was going on, not the guilt or innocence of any individual from the president on down to Rob Odle, but do I think the picture is clear as to what was going on governmentally and politically? And the answer is yes, and I think that was the function of this committee from the beginning, which, granted, is in disagreement with Senator Baker, who asked the question of, you know, what did the president know and how somebody knew it, or however it was phrased.
But, Senator, you're still talking about Watergate, the break-in, the violations of specific laws on the books, laws on wiretapping and breaking and entering.
Mm-hmm.
Let's get back to dirty tricks and your statement that you don't think the American people want to have this phase dragged out.
Mm-hmm.
What do we really know about dirty tricks? What do we know about specific agencies being used for the administration's own political ends?
Well, of course, you've had quite a few examples given at the public hearings as to Internal Revenue Service, as to the Federal Bureau of Investigation, the matters which your network and I have raised as to military intelligence possibly being used during the political campaign, how individuals were investigated, political opponents were investigated by the normal apparatus of government. We've gone through quite a bit, I think. Leslie, I'm not for stopping our investigatory efforts. In fact, a good portion of my so-called recess will still be spent on doing just that, on getting ready for the committee's reconvening. But when it gets to the point where the American people think that this is an exercise in normal politics or an exercise in vindictiveness, then, by gosh, they're going to say we're no better than that which we're arrayed against. And quite frankly, I don't want anyone in this country to feel sympathetic toward what I've heard out in that hearing room. That's the point.
Some people in Washington have already reached the conclusion in their wisdom about what is going on in the provinces that people are reacting against the committee now. You hear this over and over in Washington. Do you think that's true? Do you see any evidence of that? Your mail change?
Oh, I see some evidence to the extent that, maybe the percentage isn't as high in my own particular situation in the mail that we receive. It's still running very, very high in favor of what the committee's done. I'm not saying, Jack, that from the outset to now there hasn't been a lessening of interest or some more anti-mail. But it's clearly in favor of what the committee's done. But I can see us losing this edge unless we come up with matters of equally important, if not more important, substance than what's been covered. In other words, if we're going to drop down to a whole group of small matters in the way of, and as I don't mean to refer to it dirty tricks, but political operations, why, then I think we might have problems in our hands.
Do you think that Vice President Agnew's problems have anything to do with a shifting attitude in the public, that if there's a threat that the vice president might be indicted, that maybe we should all stop this for a while and wait and see what happens there?
No. I can tell you exactly what you're running into. You're running into, with Watergate, the very same problem that confronted the nation at the end of the 60s and 70s when we had the turmoil and the unrest, and people were perfectly willing to have these methods used, which we're now hearing about, to bring about quick order and an end to the turmoil. And once again, the American public's going to be asked, now, are you willing, since you've been on apparently a governmental bender and not caring about your constitution and not caring about your political system for a long time, are you willing to spend a little time and a little agony to straighten it out? Or are you going to blame Wall Street and our foreign currency situation and inflation and everything else on Watergate? There's no question in my mind that we've got some painful examination to do here, and I think the committee has done as much, is really what I'm saying, is I think the committee has done very close to everything it can do. Now the American people have to go ahead and make their decision. And if they want that quick end, if they're willing to say, okay, we heard it all, it was fun listening to, but, you know, that's it, then I don't think we'll have served any purpose as a committee, and that's what really concerns me.
Senator, let me follow up the Agnew question for a moment. The vice president sort of beat the news leaks to the punch by saying that he understood he was under investigation for possible violations of the law. The inevitable comparisons are being drawn by people in my business, and I'm sure by people in your business, concerning the vice president's reaction to charges against him and the reaction of the president to charges against him. Vice president held a news conference within 40 hours after the charges became known, or the possibility of charges became known. Would you draw a comparison, sir?
No, because candidly, Nelson, I've not given thought to the vice president's situation. I presume the vice president to be innocent, period, and I think that...
I'm not speaking of his relative guilt or innocence. I'm speaking of the fact that the vice president was front of network television cameras within 2 days after...
But we're talking about the vice president. We can't just eliminate those facts. They've occurred, and we're talking about not only the facts that have come to public attention in so far as the Baltimore prosecutor is concerned, but also the climate of Watergate. And I don't want to comment on the vice president situation except to say that, just like any other American, thank you very much, he's innocent. He's innocent, period. Now, I'll be glad to go ahead and make, and I have made, my comments on the president's handling of Watergate. As I've indicated, I have no evidence, and as I indicated to Jack, I have no evidence that he planned the break-in. I have no evidence that he was, except for certain testimony of Mr. Dean and some other testimony from some individuals as to whether he was warned, involved in the cover-up, etc. But I sure as heck can comment on how he's handled the whole matter. And I think, as I've said many times before, that's been ghastly. To be candid with you, I think I expect a lot more out of the commander-in-chief than I do out of the privates. And yet it's the privates that have been thrown out there on the firing line, and little has been seen of the commander-in-chief.
Senator, he's going to give a reply, a response, in some format or another, in the middle of this coming week. What do you expect from that? What do you expect him to say?
Oh, it's not a question of what I expect him to say, Jack. I'm not going to speculate on how he's going to handle this particular
matter. Let me put
it
this way, then. He has made a television speech about this April 30th. On May 22nd, he put out a 4,000-word white paper on his role. What can he say? Neither one of these still the questions. What can he say now? What can he do now, short of releasing the tapes, that will take us out of a whom do you believe situation?
Both the statements that you've referred to are obviously incomplete. And, we know they were incomplete not only on the basis of the knowledge that we now have, but the reason why they didn't fly, or why they didn't sell, if you will, was that, again, that American instinct knew that something was being held back. And that's what this country doesn't like. They dislike that a lot more, I think, than they do the situation of Watergate insofar as their chief executive is concerned.
Senator Arnold.
So I think that what can he do? Jack, I'd say just make every single same thing he should have done months ago. make every single piece of knowledge that is within his grasp public.
You tended to deprecate the value of the tapes. Isn't it essential now that we know they're there that he released the tapes?
Well, I've never deprecated the value of the tapes. As I said, I think they're enormously important from several points of view, not the least of which is they could eventually determine the guilt or innocence of an American citizen under indictment. But what I've said is I think you're going to get a pretty complete story even if you don't have them. Obviously, I wish we had them. Yes, I'd like to have the president release all those tapes that relate to the matters we've had before our committee. I'd like him to release every memorandum that was passed around in his administration as between persons in the White House and which comes slowly, you know, through the committee hearing process. I'd like him to explain every instance where a government agency was used in a manner which was not intended. I'd like all these things to be laid out by the President of the United States rather than to have them come out either by the efforts of the news media or by the efforts of my committee. That has not been the course the President has followed. And I'm telling you that insofar as gaining national confidence is concerned, I figure that whenever he makes this statement, this is the last go-around as far as the American people are concerned, and that is far more important than any impeachment or whether he's guilty of Watergate or innocent of Watergate. There has to be confidence in the man that he's going to square with all of us. The fact that he makes mistakes, good Lord, we all do that. We all do that. And the American people understand that also can happen so far as their president's concerned. But not staring him in the face and saying you're telling him a full story when you're not telling
him. You think he can regain that confidence, or you believe he can regain that confidence without releasing the tapes?
No, I think he has to release the tapes.
Senator, on the matter of the tapes, there have been numbers of suggestions for a compromise. Senator Ervin, Senator Baker suggested that maybe they listen to the tapes. Senator Mansfield suggested that the president invite the full committee down to an informal meeting just this past week. Former Justice Arthur Goldberg suggested a committee of retired Supreme Court justices. Is there still a possibility of a compromise, and is that more desirable than going through the courts to get those tapes?
Obviously, if we can go ahead and get the information without going the last inch, the court route, that would be a better thing, Nelson. But I think what I think would be best of all is what Jack was referring to a minute ago, that the president do this on his own initiative and not as a reaction either to the court or to the committee.
Senator, how do you answer your critics who say that you were especially hostile to just a handful of witnesses like Haldeman and former Attorney General Mitchell, and you were not that way with John Dean, for example?
I thought I was probably pretty hard-nosed on most of the people that came before the committee because my job was to go ahead and get the facts. I think that there are several factors that are going to influence my questioning of a witness. For example, as I've stated in the highest sense a minute ago, do I expect more out of the generals than I do the privates? And the answer is yes. And so that we bear in a lot harder there because their area of responsibility is so much greater. It also would depend, I suppose, on questioning of the witness by the committee. It depends on the knowledge that this particular witness has. I certainly don't mean, or I hope I wasn't, in any manner, shape, or form, unfair to any individual that was before me. This is a tough business, and just by the nature of the information that's been thrown out on the table. And I just didn't think this was a time for philosophy. It's more of a time, I would suppose, the feeling that I got was there an awful lot of innocent people, both involved in the tragedy directly and in the country as a whole, and my job as a senator is to protect them as best I can.
You expressed considerable anger at Charles Colson, who has been accused of being the leading dirty trickster in the White House, and he'll be coming up as the first witness in phase 1.5 when the committee resumes hearings in mid-September. Will you be questioning him?
I wonder about that. As you know, I ushered him or asked him to leave my office with some unceremonial language. I want to make sure that I wouldn't do anything that would in any way be prejudicial to him. I've not made the decision.
Are you
to
saying
whether
that you may recuse yourself?
I very well may, because of my run-in with him. As you know, I've done this once before with Secretary Stans, but that was nothing compared to this latest incident. As far as Mr. Colson is concerned, I think I've made my views known on him, and I think it does raise the question as to whether it would be proper for me to question.
Let me ask you about a witness, one of the more recent witnesses, Pat Gray. When he was nominated for FBI director, you, in effect, were one of his sponsors as the senator from Connecticut.
Right.
He has now admitted before the committee that he lied to you when you were serving in that role. Do you now believe that he would have been qualified to be FBI director?
At this point in time, in other words, viewing what he did and...
Well, to use the favorite word of the hearings, hindsight...
Oh, no, there's no question about the fact that I've known of the matters that related to him. As far as his relationships, not his personality, Pat Gray, I'm sorry, I don't care whether he lied to me or not, he's an honest man and a good man. And they took this man who had served 26 years in the military, was loyal to his president, and wanted to be FBI director, and they combined all those personality traits and twisted them out of the highest office in the land. Now, that's what I object to. These traits aren't bad traits, and does he have the right to look to the presidency, this institution, as being the epitome of integrity and of honor? He does. Instead, that institution went ahead and shaped these character traits and turned them into what was a nightmare situation for Pat Gray. Clearly, I don't think he could be, or at that time, or should have been, director of the FBI. But I don't say that about Pat Gray in now making a determination that he is a dishonest or a corrupt man. He's not. And I have more of a right than anyone else, because I was the one that finally blew him out of his chair, if you will. You know, mind you, and I pointed out this during the hearings, this was known from March 6th to April 27th, and they leave this guy sitting in that chair. I knew about it on April the 25th, and even then I didn't know the whole story. And within 48 hours, Pat was out of that chair. So all I can say is that, no, I wouldn't recommend him now, knowing the facts that I do, but I don't want to, in that answer, give the impression that I don't consider him to be a man of honor.
Senator, we have less than a minute left. There's a question that's going around among people in Washington based on what's occurred at the hearings so far, whether or not the president has turned the corner so far as his tenure in office is concerned. What's your opinion on that, sir?
Turned the corner on Watergate?
Yes, sir.
Well, I don't think he's turned any corner at all.
I mean, so far as his tenure in office is concerned, will the president, as a president, survive, do you think?
Oh, good Lord. I really have never thought as to the survival aspect of it. I'm much more interested in him becoming the president, of this nation in a greatness sense. And he can't do that until he lets it all hang out on Watergate. On Watergate. And as I said, takes responsibility not just in the broad sense, but in the very specific sense on its own shoulders.
Senator Wicker, thank you very much for being with us on Face the Nation.